closer.
In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of the women.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU-FM McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic Book History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your Kirby Crackle.
Electrifying in the world of comic books.
Electrifying.
He's like that. You know what I also really, you know what about Kirby, one of the best things about Kirby were those Kirby dots, you know?
Yes.
Just, you know, like the crackling thing around, like the energy and the little
I believe
black
that's
dots.
What Kirby Crackle was, yeah. Was meaning.
I'm just correcting you. Wait,
that's
okay.
All.
Wait, why you got to be like that?
Well, listen, let's not get off to a bad
no,
start like
come
this.
On now.
Okay, let's correct it. Let's recover.
Hold on. I want the listening audience to know.
To wear. I'd love for you to wear that little tight thing that you had on last night.
I was going to say, okay. I want the listening audience to know that Walt is wearing a Doctor Doom t-shirt tonight. He is going all in, all comic culture,
that's
all
right. And
the
it's
time.
A Kirby Doom.
It is, yes.
And it says, trust me, I'm a doctor.
I love it. I love it. Nice. I love it. So.
Put us in, Chris, I'm trying to put you in the mood.
Oh, baby. All right.
Hello.
Okay. Well, listen, let's get started with this. And, of course, we're going to start off with our new this week, as always, because today is Wednesday, and this is when the new comic books arrive on the stands today.
Worldwide, comic shops are putting their new stuff on the shelves for all of us fans to go in and check out.
Absolutely. So, new this week is brought to you by the Justice Society of America. We are an awesome team. Where the heck is our number one issue in September? I mean, Voodoo? Come on. Send an email or tweet or something to DC and complain. Because if you don't, well, don't come crying to me in September when you can't get your Power Girl fix. And believe me, I will be crying if I can't get my Power Girl fix.
Listen, you send that. I saw you, actually. You sent that email off earlier.
A few of them
you?
Already, yes.
Oh, okay, good. Well, Chris, you are right. We're going to start with new this week, which is a good place to start, I guess.
Sure, let's start with that.
Yeah. I'm going to talk. Let's go Marvel. And we'll talk about Venom.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that
number four.
So Venom number four. But if, you know, I'm both happy and amazed that
it
Venom,
reached number four.
It's reached number four, but that people are still interested in this character. I mean, there was a huge sort of surge of Venom stuff going on in the 1990s, and of course now it's still going on. I thought that the whole Venom phase had passed, but you know what? The character is still around, and people are still interested in it, so I'm kind of pleasantly surprised.
Well, here's the thing. Right?
Here's the thing.
Out of all the Spidey villains, Spidey, you know, the Rogues Gallery,
yeah,
you know, the
yeah.
Spidey's got the best villains in the universe. Spidey and Batman, they got the best villains in the universe.
Absolutely. So
right?
Hold on, just for time's sake here.
Go ahead.
So we got Doc Ock.
Yeah.
We got Mysterio.
Mysterio Vulture.
The Vulture.
Obviously the Goblin.
Electro. Green Goblin and Hobgoblin.
Right. Electro. Rhino.
The Rhino.
Right.
You know, like the list goes on. And Kingpin.
Yeah.
The list goes on and on.
On and on.
You know, so out of all these classic characters now, here comes Venom, a character that was kind of, you know, more recent than the rest of them. And he gets his own title, but yet where's my Mysterio
Never
comic?
Got Mysterio? Never got a dinner.
Yeah, no,
right?
Nothing.
You're right. You know what? What's his name there? The guy that's flying with the pumpkin.
Vulture.
Throwing.
Oh no, pumpkins. That's Hobgoblin or Green Goblin.
Hobgoblin. Green Goblin.
Green Goblin.
Yeah. You know, like he's the biggest of the big. When did he get his title?
Yeah. He got a couple of crappy little miniseries back in the day when when Marvel was pumping out all kinds of comics just for the sake of having shelf space, right?
Right.
And now Venom is still going strong.
Yeah, you're right. You are right, Chris. Out of that Spidey Rogues gallery, here you have Venom carrying his own title in the modern age.
Yeah, I'm both shocked but pleasantly surprised.
All right, good.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
Let's move on to the next one. Marvel Venom number 4 at your local comic book shop today. Chris, Batman Arkham City.
Okay, so
number 3 of 5.
Yeah, we chose this one because, of course, now Batman Arkham City ties into the video game that's coming out soon. In I think it's October. Remember I often talked about the Arkham Asylum video game that has Batman in it, and you know it's a really really great video game. Well, now they're coming out with the Arkham City game coming out in October. Now, what's going to happen is, so this comic actually ties in between the two video games. So it's kind of like, well, how did it get to this point?
Oh, so what you're saying, hold on here, back that up.
Beep, 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 beep.
So yep. What you're saying is Arkham Asylum, which was a great video game.
Yes.
And now Arkham City's coming out, and it's going to be a great video
game. Yes.
And there has to be some sort of bridge.
Right. Because
and they're like, using Batman Arkham City, the comic 5-issue miniseries, to kind of get the fans going through.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you know what? Like as most modern-day video games, this one had an ending to it. Like it's a storyline, so it had an ending to it. And now there's a new video game coming out soon. And so how the heck did it get to this point where why is it new? So this one has and it has Paul Dini as the writer. And
now, you like Paul Dini.
I am a big fan of Paul Dini. Paul Dini was one of the main writers for the Batman animated series.
Yes.
Back in the day. And he helped. He was the co-creator for the Harley Quinn character.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually did the writing for the Arkham Asylum video game and for the Arkham City game. And
Citio game. I Citio love those game. Things.
Sorry. So anyways, big fan of this Arkham City comic. So if you're planning on playing the Arkham City video game, go out and check out the comic.
Yeah, I don't think they allow you to buy the Arkham City video game until you've proven
it
that
should
you've
be.
Read the
it should be like some sort of weird law or something.
Right, or
yeah.
a test.
Yeah, a test,
right.
Exactly.
Excellent, Chris. All right, let's move on to IDW, our friends at IDW. Putting out lots of good stuff. Rocketeer Adventures.
Yeah, you know what?
Number two.
I thought we'd stray off from the norm here and go off with the Rocketeer. And no, there's a reason why I chose this one. Of course, Rocketeer was the comic done by the late, great Dave Stevens.
Yes.
And but you know what's really great about this comic? So we got Rocketeer Adventures. So we've got brand new stories by... This is why I chose this. The lineup of talent in this comic is incredible. Let me just start by saying a few names here. We got Mark Waid, we got Chris Weston, Darwin Cook, Dave Stewart, Jeff Darrow, Gene Haw. You know, like
whoa,
like this is a comic that's got absolutely phenomenal talent in it.
Half these guys are Canadians.
Well, at least one. I don't know.
At least
half
one.
Of them.
Okay,
yeah.
But you're right. You are right. And. I guess, okay, so you have a property like Rocketeer.
Yes.
That's not your basic bread and butter Cape Marvel DC type thing.
Right, exactly.
And then you have, like, you know, obviously, is it Dave Stevens, right?
Dave Stevens was the creator of it. Right.
And you obviously have these very talented creators wanting to be a part of it, even though
right.
it's not super mainstream and stuff like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I think they like... You know, the property, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they want to contribute to the canon of the whole thing.
And let's not forget that I know it wasn't, you know, extremely well received, but, I mean, there was a Rocketeer movie.
Well, you know what? And it had, the Rocketeer title
yeah.
does have a cult following.
For sure, yeah. Yeah. And, of course, the Rocketeer is sort of loosely based on the King of the Rocket Men kind of serials from the 1920s and 30s.
Right,
and, you
right,
know, so it's
right.
sort of a
now, the Rocketeer, what was that? Oh, Angelo Jolie was in one of those... Captain Midnight or something Midnight. It was one of those period pieces. Kind of reminded me of the Rocketeer
with the
1940s
yeah.
look to it yeah. and stuff like that. I could be totally wrong.
No,
here,
you're right. I don't remember the name of it, but you are right. Yes.
Okay, so Rocketeer Adventures number 2 from IDW at your local comic book shop
yes.
today. And that moves us to Simpsons.
We've got our kids' pick of the week.
Right, I'm sorry, the kids' pick of the week. Now,
yes.
now Chris, now we're trying to do every now and then a kids' pick of the week. Is Simpsons a kids' book still?
Well,
or?
You know what? I would have to say, yes, it is. I think it falls into one of those categories where it sort of crosses the genres. I don't know, maybe not genres, maybe that's a bad term, but it crosses the age ranges.
Right.
Where adults enjoy it, but kids enjoy it too. You know, it's always been sort of kid-friendly. Maybe not kid as a, you know, 5-year-old,
right.
but certainly, you know, in the preteen era.
Right. Oh, fair enough. It's one of those books where you're right. The 10, 11-year-olds want to read it.
Yeah.
And the parents may go, hey, come on, Simpsons, that's kind of a little, whatever.
There might be a little bit kind of not crude humor, but maybe a little humor that's not quite
I mean, if it's
kids.
Crude, hey, listen, if you want to sell to 10-year-olds, you throw crude humor in it, okay?
Absolutely.
That's the way to do it. So Simpsons Super Spectacular number 13. Now, of course, Simpsons is one of those things that started off, obviously, like the Flintstones, as a cartoon on TV. But boy, it's become a comic book phenomenon on its own.
Well,
too,
yeah,
right.
And this is crazy because it became a comic phenomenon. And I was a pretty diehard Simpsons fan for a long, long time. And when the Simpsons comic came out, I was kind of not really all that with it. But you know what? I have to say that Bongo Comics has done a great job of staying true to all the characters, coming up with great storylines with the different characters. And it really is a funny, funny comic. I got to say, it's really great.
All right. Perfect. Crystal, let's end New This Week right there. We got lots of stuff to talk about at today's show. And I'm pretty sure that you're going to have some sort of musical stuff for
us.
Well,
you know, as you and I were talking before the show, we have decided that tonight we are going to have an all Spider-Man Krantz musical interlude show.
I'm in heaven.
Well, I hope you are, because it's some pretty cool music. As I said, these cartoons were produced in the 1960s by Krantz Studios, and we thought it'd be pretty cool to kind of give a smattering of all that music from that era.
Perfect.
So here's one called "The End of Skymaster." That's just heaven. It's like, you can just see that. There was obviously that young Jethro Tull did a little cameo in there with that flute. And, of course, the Doc Severinsen Orchestra is just kicking it. That guy's got nothing on Zamfir.
Who?
the pan.
Okay. Yeah, that's Chris. Ooh, let's move it along.
Tough crowd.
Hey,
tough
Chris,
crowd.
Right. And as always, you are our magician, a talisman. Yes, in segueing into industry news, as you always do. what better thing to start talking about than really great news early this week from DC, from the DC press release, from their big DC roadshow meeting.
I love this, by the way.
Yes. Isn't this good? They're claiming no more writing to trade.
Yeah, this is fantastic. You know what? Because for so long, for too long now, the big companies have been writing so that they can produce a trade paperback at the end of the storyline. So all of their storylines are set to story arcs around the 6 or 7 issue story run, right?
Right.
So if they're going to have a storyline, you got to make sure it's 6 or 7 issues roughly around there so you can sell the trade after that. And now DC is now saying, hey, you know what? No more writing just for trades. You know what?
No more writing just for trades.
No more writing just for trades. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So story arcs are now they're actually blaming this whole story arc thing for industry malaise.
Get out.
Malaise.
You have to explain to me after the show
what malaise is. Malaise is like,
right. It's like,
know,
a spread on
boredom.
Bread,
tired. Yeah, it was kind of like a spread. Yeah.
Right.
Spreads across the country. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I'm reading this too, and I'm thinking it's
I'd great. Like some Batman sans malaise, please.
Yes. Hey. So my concern here is what do you mean too dialogue heavy? The thing says, you know, these when you're writing for trades, you become too dialogue heavy. You know, like isn't dialogue good in comics? Is what are we going to get here? Are we going to get like you know, huge splash pages with no dialogue and have a 2 minute comic read?
I think the problem is people are forcing the way the writing style goes. They're trying to force more dialogue or they're trying to force certain things. And I think they have to let the story write itself almost, right?
Right.
They have to decide, you know, if it calls for a splash page with no dialogue or if it calls for many pages with no dialogue, then put no dialogue. But if it calls for, you know, some sort of explanation, then go ahead and put the dialogue
in. So let me ask you a question there. Do you think DC is going to go back to the more one issue, two issue story arcs?
I hope they do. I really hope they do, because you know what? That, to me, and this is only my opinion, those are the kind of books that get people interested in comics, because they can pick one comic up and they can, you know, all of a sudden, hey, say, hey, you know what? I really like this. I want to see what this is all about.
Okay, let's latch on to this then, Chris. Really get to the bottom of this.
Okay.
Okay. So first of all, is DC going to a place that no longer exists? Is my concern. Is DC searching for something in the past that they're trying to reproduce, and maybe that time has come and gone? Maybe the natural progression of the medium is the story arc, right? I don't know.
But maybe it's gone. Maybe it was the story arc. Maybe that whole trade paperback phenomenon, maybe that's kind of dwindling, because now we're reaching to a point where trade paperbacks aren't as they're more commonplace than they were before, right? So people call them graphic novels now. All of a sudden, they're accepted in society as far as a literary medium goes, right?
Right.
So now we've got enough of those graphic novels. We've got enough of these sort of literary books out there that people can say, hey, you know what? This is a valid medium.
Right.
Now let's get people back into reading. Let's get the 1 issue, 2 issue story arcs because maybe people actually start picking them up just for the fun of it again.
Right. So is DC, the question is here, because DC's big. Like, they're like Marvel and DC,
yep,
they're big. Then Warner's is big. Is DC actually seeing a viability in the old comic concept, and are they kind of backing money behind it because, you know, they're expecting profits down the road?
It would appear that way.
And does DC think that the comic medium, the monthlies, were hijacked by these trade paperback type of things?
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
So my next question is because trades was kind of the direction that the industry was going for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens to trades? Do they write trades for do they write straight to trade now, and they write these monthlies for, let's say, a character like Batman, the most read character,
yeah,
probably out there? Like, where are they going to go with this?
I think they could do straight to trades. I mean, really, if you look at a book like, say, for example, Brian Azzarello's there's a Joker story there that he did, and then there's you know, the Brian Bolan and Alan Moore story with the Joker's final joke.
Right.
There's lots of so-called, you know, one-shot trades out there that they have done, mm-hmm, with characters like the Batman. But I think those should be allowed. I mean, they don't need to be in the regular.
So in the new
lines.
Batman number one comes September.
Yeah.
They DC wants to treat that as, hey, this is a Batman monthly comic book, and if we have a story to tell in 1 issue, we're going to tell it in 1 issue.
But you know what? That brings up an excellent point, because now
it does.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know what? With all these new DC number ones, how are they going to catch on to people with seven issue or six issue story arcs when they're trying to sell the first issue to see if it actually sells, like to see if people actually are going to enjoy it with this new Batman or the new Superman to see if they like it or not. They have to have, you know, one issue or two issue story arcs to get people involved in these new characters.
Right, right. Well, you know what? This is actually, Chris, exciting times.
It really is.
This is, you know, DC, I think, is kind of really pushing the envelope, reassessing the whole comic book industry.
Yep. Yep.
And which we're going to move on to the next basically piece of industry news, which ties into the one we were just talking about. And on July 20th, DC is handing out a free sampler.
Well, you know, this is great. Once again, I think DC is really pushing the envelope here. DC and Marvel used to do this kind of stuff a long time ago. They used to do all kinds of co-op ads. If you wanted to have shopping bags, like, you know, for your store printed up with the Batman characters or whoever, you could, you know, they would pay for 50% and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, they almost got too big for themselves. DC and Marvel decided, hey, you know, we don't need to do this anymore because these comics are selling. Well, now they're saying, you know what? Hey, let's just step back a bit and see how – let's try to help the retailers out, which I think is great. Because for a long time, the retailers were really on their own, especially with things like Free Comic Book Day, where they would be on the hook for all the entire cost of giving out these comics, right?
Yeah. Whereas Thanks,
now,
guys.
Whereas now, DC and DC is saying, hey, you know what? We're going to help the retailers out because the retailers are the medium – To get to the mass public to try to sell the books.
Right. Right. Now, here's, like, being a retailer myself, here's the thing. I'm not that I'm reading into it, but I'm kind of sensing, is that, damn, they still need us.
Absolutely.
But do they like the fact that they still need us? Is it in their cry, you know, that they still need us?
Probably.
Is you know, they're extending all they're saying, "Hey guys, we're going to give heavier discounts for these number ones. We're going to have returnabilities for these number ones. We're going to give you on July 20th free DC Comics samplers so you can hand out to your customers." It's like, you know, The local comic book shop is still the key to DC's launch.
You know what? We kind of got a little bit of ahead of ourselves. We should probably tell the audience what this is all about.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, I got a little bit, you know, busy.
Go ahead.
There. So basically what they're saying is July 20th is DC's free comics sampler day. And there are going to be, you know, giving out comics, and there'll be deep discounts on seven different titles. They're going to be, you know, all kinds of 100% returnability for comics. They're going to have midnight launch parties for comics. They're going to give out all kinds of free sample comics for the retailers. So this is something where the DC is trying to entice people to start reading their comics and buying their comics and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Now, on a website I read, I think it was, it might have been like, I'm not sure, I want to quote the right website. It might have been ICV2. It might have been Bleeding Cool. I think it was ICV2, where they mentioned that DC has admitted that the ratio for printed comics to downloads is like 600 to 1 or 650
right,
to
right,
1
okay.
or something like that. So, you know, all these things are being put out through the local comic book shop network that they have
right.
to sell their stuff.
Right.
Because if this is going to work, this is going to work through the network of local comic book stores across North America, across the world.
Yep.
Right. And so when you're reading all this about the DC samplers and the heavy discounts and they DC really needs all the local comic book stores worldwide
yeah.
to really buy into what they're trying to do here and not shy away from it saying, yeah, I'm not going to order any of this crap, right?
They're
saying, hey, guys, we're giving you heavier discounts. Hey, guys, we're giving you 100% returnability on these type of things. Hey, guys, we're giving you free sample
yeah.
stuff. Hey, buy in with us on this big change.
Yeah.
Please, you know,
yeah.
we
yeah.
need you right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge change for DC Comics, so they really need the retailers to help buy into this. And I think you really clicked on a good
but
point
But it's
there.
The local comic book shop retailers.
Yeah.
It's still the predominant way for them to move their product
yeah.
out to the
mainstream. Yeah.
And I guess, I hope they remember us when it all works out.
Well, they probably won't, but you know what? Hopefully it'll generate more sales for the retailers.
Fair enough. All right. Let's move it along, Chris. I want to talk about,
This is a big topic.
Yeah, I was reading this. This was very cool. New York Times, some guy, I don't know his first name. The guy's name is Staples. Help me out here. Pop Staples. No, Brent Staples. Pop Staples,
Pop,
of course.
Who's Pop was Staples?
The Staples Singers, you know.
What?
Okay, anyway.
I don't know.
We'll save that for another show. Brent Staples writes for the New York Times, chimed in an editorial piece about the Kirby case, about the heirs' rights and the heirs' lawsuits.
Yeah.
You know, the Superman case obviously
has
the heirs to the Superman case wanting a piece of the pie.
Right.
The heirs to Kirby, Jack Kirby, want a piece of the pie. And the great little write-up here, I'll read this, I guess, verbatim, just to go. The lawsuit filed against DC by Superman heirs and against Marvel by Kirby's descendants are forcing modern entertainment conglomerates to, quote, reckon with the amoral practices of the old comic workshops,
right,
unquote, and compelling modern courts to decide, and quote, how to credit creative works produced at a time when even the most talented artists were treated as serfs.
Right. And of course they were. I mean, now, of course, decades later, we're looking at these serfs, quote unquote, artwork, and we're like, these guys are legends.
Legends.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so really these guys did help create popular culture these days. If you look at, Jack Kirby, the king, really, he helped create, I don't know how many different properties that are out have become movies now. You know, I don't know, the Avengers, and he helped create Spider-Man.
The whole part of the Kirby case was basically weighing in on Stan Lee's testimony, where Stan Lee currently now, or last 10, 20 years, is saying, you know, he was basically a hired artist. But in earlier interviews in the late 60s and 70s,
right,
you know, it was kind of contradictory in a sense that he said, you know, Kirby was the man. He was the guy, you know, coming up, and I was, you know, he was coming up with the riffs, and writing the music, right? Writing the lyrics, that kind of thing.
Well, because they had the Marvel method, right, of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, basically, Stan Lee, as far as I know, Stan Lee would come up with a plot idea, and he would tell it to Jack Kirby, and Jack Kirby would go ahead and you know, do all the drawings for it and do all the pages for it, and then Stan Lee would look at the pages and say, okay, this guy's saying this, and kind of insert the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was the Marvel method of doing the comics.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really, I mean, you know, without the collaboration of both of them, nothing would exist. But of course, you know, now people have 20/20 vision for the past, and they're looking at saying, hey, well, you know what? It was actually me that did everything, and, you know, Kirby really was just a hired artist, right?
Right. I guess. Well, but what it comes down to is, like you alluded to earlier, is it's a multi-billion dollar industry now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And basically, you know, guys that were treated, you know, that couldn't get advertising gigs.
Yeah.
Because that's where the money was in the 50s and 60s,
for sure,
right?
For sure.
They couldn't get advertising gigs. They had to draw for comics.
Yeah.
And by drawing, these are creative people. The creative juices are flowing. They're in the prime of their life. They're productive. And they're coming up with these really cool concepts. And you know, they're getting paid $2 a page for them,
yeah,
right? And now it's all coming to roost in the sense that, you know, It wouldn't be an issue if the industry just went nowhere. But
now
that it's billions of dollars industry, it's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, my old man, you know, he created this stuff.
Right.
And he helped create, you know, like, where is his fair share?
Yes.
Where are his descendants'
yep,
fair share?
Yep.
And you know what? It's actually a you know, something that is a viable concern.
Absolutely. They have a viable right, and they have a good point.
Right. And I'll end it with Staples, this guy that wrote the commentary on the New York Times, by the way. He says, there's no doubt that the King of Comics contributed far more to Marvel and to popular culture than he received credit for.
Well, speaking of popular culture, let's get back to a little bit of the old Spider-Man Krantz cartoon series. And this one here is is called the Elevator.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chris, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless.
Well, you know,
that's like a movement from Tchaikovsky.
Oh well, I don't know if I want to talk about Tchaikovsky's movement.
Right. No, it was. I'm just a huge fan of the Krantz thing, and thank you for. I guess dedicating the whole show to those brilliant guys in the 60s.
Do you remember WKRP in Cincinnati when Les Nessman couldn't say Chichi Rodriguez?
Yes,
that's how I felt. Chai Chai Rodriguez,
and then I think it went like this: It goes, and today Chai Chai Rodriguez shot a 3-under par. Hopefully tomorrow he'll play up to par.
That's how I felt trying to say Tchaikovsky.
Right. Yes. Okay. Hey, let's move it along. Chris, I want to talk about, this is comic related in a way, I guess. The Supreme Court in the United States strikes down the California law that banned juniors, young under 18s, from renting violent video games.
So what I want to know is, why would they strike down that law? I don't understand that. What is wrong, really, with... you know, banning juniors from renting violent video games?
Well, I think they're going into the – I think it's – I'm not sure which amendment it is. It might be the 5th or it might be the – oh, God, I don't have it in front of me. Which amendment? There's an amendment in the United States that's protected by law, and they're claiming that, books – you can have classic literature – that has kind of offensive material, but they're the First Amendment,
right?
And they're protected by the First Amendment, and they're basically following the letter of the law,
right?
And then just basically applying it to video games as well.
Well, okay, but they do make sort of a good point. They talk about the original Grimm's fairy tales, which
right.
we know of the fairy tales recount like Snow White, Cinderella, and Hansel and Greta.
Cinderella. Yeah, that was a movie you saw about 2 weeks ago. I'm pretty sure you told me about that.
2 weeks ago, that was last night.
Right.
But they talk about how. These fairy tales, really, I mean, they've been, updated and Disney-ified, if that's a word.
Right. But they were pretty gruesome.
The originals were pretty gruesome, right? Hansel and Gretel getting eaten by witches and stuff like that. And I think they're talking about how, these original fairy tales were actually pretty gruesome, and they were designed for kids, so why not have video games with all kinds of blood and gore and all that kind of stuff designed for kids?
Right. Now, you're more a game player than I am. Now... the comic video games, the DC Universe Online game, the Arkham City, the Marvel one that's coming out.
Yep.
None of these are.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, Arkham Asylum is pretty dark.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's for kids. I would say it's
the U.S. Supreme Court, an 8-year-old can go and play.
Yeah, according to that, and 5-year-old can go and play it, and kill people and break people's necks and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Great world we live in. But you know what? For the most part, a lot of these other games, as far as comic books goes, they're not that terribly bad. It depends on which comic books we're talking about, though. I mean, there are some games that have become comic books,
right,
and vice versa. So, if you look at, say like the Halo or something like that, where the guy's going around blowing up aliens and stuff like that. Well, it's aliens. It's fantasy. Is it real?
Right.
Real? I don't know.
Right. Right. I got you.
But then you get a game like Modern Warfare where blowing up other people and you're killing them. You're going in the malls and strafing across and killing people ad nauseum.
Right.
So is that the right thing to do for a 5-year-old? I would probably say no.
Well, the vote apparently was 7-2 that it's okay based on these things. Now, I'm going to be an old fuddy-duddy like you and disagree because, common sense versus the letter of the law. You can take the letter of the law to the point where, you basically put common sense on the shelf in order to adhere to the letter
of
the law.
So, okay, let's just take this one step further here. So does that mean that according to the First Amendment – that a 5-year-old can go ahead and rent a movie that has all kinds of violence in it, or go ahead and rent a pornographic movie?
Well, that's the thing.
Where does it stop?
In the United States, it's weird. You can apparently, I could be wrong here, but you can killing the people, chopping his head off, putting him in the toilet, and, you know, peeing on him or something like that, if pardon my French, but is okay.
Right.
But a boob,
yeah,
you know, a natural occurring phenomenon,
yeah,
apparently,
yeah,
is not okay for, yeah, an 8-year-old. So it's kind of, something's out of whack here. 7-2. You know, what I found interesting, Clarence Thomas,
yeah,
the Supreme Court guy, he was one of the objectors. And I believe he said something like, you know, I don't want my kids seeing any pubic hair in any video games.
Right, right.
Okay. Let's
I think
on.
Is that what he said? Pubic,
no,
hair?
He
actually said,
no,
that?
He didn't. No, he, no, didn't. Being an old guy, I remember when he was there. Never mind. All right, let's move that along.
Ooh, all right. Tough
all
crowd.
Right, then.
Okay.
Keep going,
Chris,
here. Green Lantern. Okay, the movie, I don't know if you've seen it or not. I haven't seen it because people told me it wasn't that good. But, you know, I just decided to abstain.
Okay.
They're actually, Warner Brothers is planning a Green Lantern sequel.
Yes, despite the fact that it, you know, it didn't do as well as people thought, they're actually planning a sequel to this movie. I still haven't had a chance to go see it, and I probably should, seeing as we keep on talking about it all the,
yeah,
time.
Yeah, tell me about it.
But now, hey, I wouldn't talk there, mister. I never haven't seen a,
no, you know what? I did see
movie.
Thor. I enjoyed it. Now,
I like how you just
got rid of
that.
How much of this is Marvel having successful strikes at their movie properties, and DC not wanting to appear like they're abandoning,
oh,
their,
that's a good point,
couple,
that's a very
of their
good
properties,
point, you know,
right?
That,
it's like,
yep,
I'm going to, Warner Brothers, I got deep pockets, I'm going to stick this out. I want flipping franchises of superhero movies.
You know what? Okay, so I've got one thing to say about that. Actually, two things. First thing is, I agree with you that they're probably trying to say, hey, you know what? We're going to stick this out and see how it goes. Second thing is, do you remember the Austin Power series of movies with Mike,
yes,
Myers?
I do.
Okay,
yes, I do.
Okay, so the first one actually didn't do that well in the theaters.
Right.
Then all of a sudden it hit video and did extremely well. And then the second and third movies did phenomenally well, right? So maybe DC is hoping for that, that rental, that download, that whatever phenomenon, and then all of a sudden now the second one will do even better than the first one.
Right. I think you're right. And I think they quoted something about Batman Begins, you know, how it didn't do that well, but then Batman Dark Knight,
because, right,
they stuck with it, it made a gazillion dollars,
right?
Right? So I think they're going with that. Now, last weekend, I think, because Green Lantern, it went down to $18 million, which is obviously still a good weekend, but,
yeah,
since they got $200 million into the stupid movie, then,
well, yeah,
it's,
yeah,
not that good. But it dropped 66%, but we'll see. We'll see the long weekends coming up in Canada here, the July 1st, and then the USA.
July 4th weekend. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but the problem with that is now all of a sudden we've got Transformers Dark of the Moon coming out this weekend as well. Actually, it opens up tonight, if I believe correctly, at midnight.
Right.
So, you know, how is that going to play up against, you know, Green Lantern and...
Only time will tell.
Oh, you're so philosophical.
All right, Chris, let's move on to more somber news.
Somber? Well, I thought we were going to... Hold on. Wait. Whoa. I thought we were going to talk about cars.
That was, we just talked about cars and how Green Lantern dropped to $18 million and then,
but we didn't actually talk about Cars 2 coming out.
I'm sorry. Cars 2 is coming out. I skipped that because we're really, really,
right,
the show is moving. You know what it is when you and I talk? We lose ourselves in our subject matter.
Oh, it's sweet in a sort of a weird way. But anyways, somber news now.
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry.
Of course, the passing of Gene Colan.
Now, Walt, you being a comic book Overstreet advisor, what kind of books has Gene Colan worked on in the past?
He was a giant in the industry. He was one of the Marvel linchpins, really,
right,
was. He's one of the names that you don't hear, because when Marvel, you hear obviously of Kirby, you hear of Steve Ditko, who did the original Spider-Man run and was famous for his Doc Strange run. Obviously, you hear about the kind of sensationalized Starenko and Neil Adams stuff. But Gene Colan, really, I mean, he did that amazing Daredevil run. Obviously, he did a Doc Strange run as well. He... Howard the Duck.
Tomb of Dracula.
But I was getting to
Tomb of Dracula.
Because that was probably his signature run.
Yeah.
So Tomb of Dracula... 70 issues. He drew all 70 of them.
Yeah.
And the bit of a backstory was that Stan Lee tried to get him onto the Kirby school, and basically he said no.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he
I
said, sorry,
that.
I'm going to do things my way.
Really?
Stan Lee shopped around the title. Colan really wanted a Tomb of Dracula. He did a splash, sent it to Lee.
Yep.
Lee looked at it, goes,
it's your title.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're in.
You're in. And that's probably his signature series. Yeah. But he went on. He did stuff for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, this is great. You know, I'm just reading the clip here. You know, he did stuff for DC as well. But I thought it was really interesting that, you know, he, for comic nerds like ourselves, really he's known for his Tomb of Dracula. I mean, he did work on Daredevil and a bunch of other work. But, you know, Tomb of Dracula was his signature run. And I thought it was really cool that, you know, now in the 2000s, and he went off and did Buffy the Vampire
Slayer, which kind of it's a vampire
like,
book,
well,
right?
Yeah, which is like a vampire book for the modern age. And here he's still doing the vampire stuff and making it cool again. I thought that was just a really neat little story. That
And you know what? He's like again because of obviously the Silver Age in comics, the old age in comics. These guys are all old and they're all passing. You know, way too early for all us fans. But Gene Colan was truly a giant in the industry, and he'll be missed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Chris, let's move on. We got one more before we get into our main topic.
Yep.
Iron Man, Wolverine, they're making their anime debut on the G4 network in late July. So I'm reading this, and I'm going, and something puzzled me when it said that the familiar Marvel characters have been localized to make them more interesting for Japanese audiences.
Yeah, I don't like this at all.
Yes.
I think you and I share the same opinion on this. So it seems, maybe I'm reading this incorrectly, but it seems to me what they're doing is they're taking the Marvel characters, which are primarily North American characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're making them based out of and have stories within other countries, such as so make them more interesting. So, for example, they're going to make them based out of Japan.
And they'll be anime-ized.
Right.
So they'll have kind of like that anime look to them, the big eyes and stuff like that.
The anime thing I don't really mind so much. It's the fact that they're saying that they're being localized. So I don't know.
Right.
I don't understand what that means. Does that mean that you know, so now their stories are only going to take place in Japan? Are they going to be
Japanese people?
Are they going to have Japanese, you know, origins now? Like,
right.
What does this mean?
I don't get it. That's a good point.
So does this mean that, you know, that all of a sudden now, I mean, I'm not trying to offend anybody, but does this mean that if it's going to appear, are these characters, if they were going to be, you know, in Mexico, are they going to become Mexican characters? If they're going to be, you know, in Africa, are they going to be African characters?
Right, will Wolverine wear wooden shoes in Holland?
Exactly. Yeah, you know? I don't know. Like, you know, I just don't get it.
Right. Well, I mean, it's funny because the anime invasion, the manga anime invasion from Japan with their characters came into North America and, you know, obviously flourished and we bought into, you know, their interpretations of their characters. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, too, but like, you know, Wolverine is 40, 35 years old and Spider-Man is 50 years old. These have been read widely in Japan already. The anime network there, are they saying that, you know, we're not reaching enough people? We have to kind of modify them to reach the local audience.
Do you remember there was that Spider-Man comic that they made for India that was Peter Parker or something like that.
It was
an all Indian, East Indian, I'll call it, not North American Indian, East Indian Spider-Man comic, and they made it so that the origin was designed strictly for the Indian market, right? So
right.
It was a completely Eastern Indian character. So is this what they're trying to do? I mean, I don't know because we haven't seen it yet. I'm just asking. Like, I don't know.
Well,
how
I mean,
works.
I don't have any examples in front of me, but perhaps like say classic literature. And I'm not obviously saying that, you know, the creation of a comic character is classic literature, though it may be. You know, the concepts of that classic literature, like of it may not be the Spider-Man per se, but it may be the teenage kid that gets great powers, but within that local context and stuff like that. So that may work for them. I don't know. But, I mean, I guess it's showing us the power of the comic books and of the comic book characters. And it's showing us people are thinking of ways to reach into the crevices that they haven't already reached.
Exactly, exactly. Right. Well, you know what? This seems to be a little bit of a topic for the ages. I'm going to just quickly cut now to another Krantz Spider-Man song. This one's called The Scarf. And, of course, for those of you familiar with the old Spider-Man cartoon, you will know it very well.
You know, Chris, it dawned on me when I was listening to that great tune. You know, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark has had all kinds of problems
in
New York on their Broadway. You know, that's the solution is simple. Throw that number
absolutely
into the you know, into the play.
You know, they don't need any Bono or
no!
any of those new hip-hoppy kind of crazy
whatever
kind of whatever.
Yeah.
You know what they need? More Krantz.
More Krantz.
More Krantz.
You can never have enough Krantz.
That's going to be my new Facebook or Twitter tweet or whatever you call it. I don't even know what I'm talking about
because
I don't do that stuff. But anyways, listen, our next segment is brought to you by the Anti-Life Equation. If you know the answer, please email it to darkside_1970@hotmail.com.
Good for you, Chris. And of course, it brings us to the main topic, which we're continuing from last week.
Continuing,
because it's such a weighty topic and big topic that we couldn't get it all done.
No.
And if I keep rambling like I am, we won't
get it
done
this
time either.
So why don't you just make with the hush-hush there?
Right.
All right.
So DC, all the number ones. Last week we covered the Superman titles and the Batman titles.
Yeah.
We're going to continue reviewing all the number ones coming out September from DC.
Awesome. All right. So the first one on our list is, of course, Green Lantern number one, written by Geoff Johns and with art by Doug Mankey. And I think it's Mankey, or maybe it's Mankey, and Christian Alamy. Now, of course, this is the new Green Lantern. Once again, we're going to do thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. Green Lantern will survive. Here's the thing with DC. They had such I read something about DC continuing basically the storylines of Batman and Green Lantern into these new number ones because they're having so much success with the Batman and Green Lantern.
Right.
They did not dare take Geoff Johns off the Green Lantern
for
this
not.
New list. Because
yeah.
Green Lantern was B-list character that now is A-list on the DC sales charts. So they're leaving this one alone.
Okay, so we're going to say thumbs up for both of those, right?
Yep.
For both
and those, Green Lantern Core number one, written by Pita J. Tomasi.
Yeah.
Now
one of the things about the Green Lantern Corps is, you know, I know Tomasi is a pretty good writer, and I don't really know Parison or Scott Hanna. I know Scott Hanna, but Parison, I'm not familiar with his artwork. I think what's gonna guide this comic is the myriad of different you know, Green Lantern characters out there, and people like to see all the different kinds of characters out there in Green Lantern. So I'm gonna give this one a thumbs up as well.
Yeah, Green Lantern as a property will easily carry two, perhaps three titles, which brings us to the last two, which I'm pegging one of them to disappear.
Yeah.
Relatively quickly. So we got Green Lantern New Guardians number one. And we got Red Lanterns number one. New Guardians is written by Tony Bedard, and the Red Lanterns is written by Peter Milligan. Now, Peter Milligan has done I forget the titles he was on, but he's done like recognized
yes.
work before.
Well, and Tony Bedard has done lots of work. Tony Bedard was one of those guys that came on the scene really strong with the cross-gen comics,
right? Yes.
And so these are guys that have been around for a while. You know, art with New Guardians is by Tyler Kirkham and Bat, and Red Lanterns is Ed Bennis and Rob Hunter.
I just don't see Green Lantern as a property carrying four titles long term.
I'm going to have to say thumbs down for both of those titles.
Yeah, both?
I'm going to go for both. New Guardians, I don't know. I like both those writers, but I just don't see them lasting very long.
All right, I see the New Guardians lasting and the Red Lanterns going first.
All right.
Let's move it along. Oh, this is big. This is their big one. I think this is, you know, they're banking on this one more than any other one, is the Justice League number one.
Yeah, this is a great team here. Look at this. So we've got written by Geoff Johns, art and cover by Jim Lee and Scott Williams, and variant cover by David Finch. This is going to be like their
flagship title.
Title. Exactly. Right. Those are the words. You're a great guy.
Well, and here they are. They are mimicking Marvel, because you and I talked about this before. Marvel a few years ago decided that the Avengers will be their flagship title, and everything will kind of emanate from the Avengers, right? And here DC is taking note, and they're going with, you know, Johns, they're going with Jim Lee, they're going with their big guns for this big title.
Yeah. I'm going to say thumbs up for that one.
Absolutely. That's going to last as long as Johns and Lee are writing it, and then probably 150 issues after.
Okay, so you know what? Okay, Justice League International number one, written by Dan Jurgens and art by Aaron Lopresti and Matt Ryan. I'm going to say thumbs up for this one because I think Dan Jurgens is a great writer and Aaron Lopresti is a great artist.
Okay, but Justice League International, they've had a few runs of Justice League International before. It never worked.
But you know what? I think Dan Jurgens can do this because he's an old-time artist, or sorry, writer, and I think he can pull this one off. I'm not a big fan of his artwork, but I think I like his writing style. And I think for the characters that are involved in this one, which are Batman, Booster Gold, Guy Gardner, Fire, Ice, Vixen, Rocket Red, I think it's all those old characters from way back in the 1980s, right?
Back in the day.
And I think that Dan Jurgens, because he's been around since back then, I think he can pull this one off.
All right. Let's go. This one intrigues me, is Aquaman number one, because it's written by Jeff Johns.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Art by Ivan Reis, who of course, that tandem is the tandem that propelled the Green Lantern
yes.
into Tier 1 stardom.
Yeah. So does this mean that possibly Aquaman will finally get his day? Can Jeff Johns pull this one off? Do you think Jeff Johns can actually make Aquaman a Tier 1 character? I mean, in my heart, he's always been Tier 1, mm-hmm. but in reality, he's been Tier 2.
Yeah, in reality.
I mean, he had a great cartoon many years ago.
Meanwhile, Aquaman!
Exactly, yes.
Right. The only thing I'm worried about, and I'm not sure if there's any other titles, but Justice League, Green Lantern, Aquaman, all written by Jeff Johns. Is the guy, you know, is he a Bendis? Is he carrying five titles a month or even three? Is that too much for him? I mean, obviously it helps with tying in storylines
yeah,
and stuff like
sure,
that. But,
sure.
You know, he's their guy, right? And now, if Jeff Johns is overworked, what's he going to drop first? Is he going to drop Green Lantern? No. Is he going to drop Justice League? No.
Yeah, he's going to drop Aquaman.
Right.
For sure.
So, I mean, I hope it works.
I hope it does, too.
I'm giving it a thumbs up as long as Johns and Ivan Reis, as long as they can keep going.
Yeah, me too.
All
okay.
Right.
Wonder Woman, number one, by Brian Azzarello.
Good writer.
With art by Cliff Chiang. Now, Brian Azzarello, famous for 100 Bullets. Cliff Chiang's been around for a long time as well. I'm going to have to say thumbs up for this one.
Okay, but Brian Azzarello, though, his record isn't 100%. So he's got that writing style,
yep.
Which worked on 100 Bullets.
Yep.
He tried to transfer in a couple other different titles that didn't work as much. I mean, his Broken City run on Batman was kind of anticlimactic to the Jim
yeah,
Lee one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't judge that. Because if you took that – so here's a guy that had to follow up Jim Lee
and Jeff Loeb,
right? So how do you follow that up? So here's a guy that's a strong writer, but you know what? Nothing's going to compare to that. He had a great story run with that, but you know what? People were comparing it like we are now to Jim Lee's work, right?
Right, which came right before it.
So it's unfair.
Right.
I think he's going to do okay on this book. You know, I think Wonder Woman is one of those characters of which – you know, George Perez did a great run of Wonder Woman on in the 80s, and William Messner Loebs did a great run for a while.
Here's
too.
The thing with Wonder Woman, too, as far as DC is concerned, I think. Wonder Woman is, you know, from the beginning, day one. Wonder Woman is part of the Trinity.
Yes.
Wonder Woman, they will not give up on Wonder Woman.
No.
All signs and everything, and all indications and sales figures show that Wonder Woman is waning. DC will say, you know what? We're throwing money at Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
We're throwing talent at Wonder Woman. So based on the talent, it should last
I'm
a while.
Say yes. Okay,
all right. Keep
let's keep going here. Flash number one with Francis Manapul, Brian Buccellato, and art by Francis Manapul as well.
Can't be anybody hotter than Francis Manapul right
but
now.
But can he write? He's writing this one. I don't know. I'm going to say – I hate to – please don't kill me, but I'm going to say no. I'm going to say thumbs down on this
I'm going to say thumbs up. The Flash, I mean, if he was writing Captain Atom, I'd say no.
Okay.
But he's writing The Flash.
So you're saying the character is going to do...
The character, there's enough of a fan base in the character that wants the character to work.
All right.
And I think they're going to push him through this.
Okay.
All right.
Let's keep going here. Captain Atom. I have no idea who J.T. Krull is, and I apologize if I'm even saying that wrong. Freddie Williams II, you know, I know his artwork. I think he's okay. I don't know enough about either of these guys.
Right, but Captain Atom, obviously thumbs down for me. Captain Atom has not been able to hold a title for any kind of serious amount of time.
Well,
I know he had a little bit, but in the 80s everybody had a 70-ish run in the 80s.
Okay.
That's when everybody... Anyway, Chris, we're running out of time. Okay. Let's say the Fury of the Firestorm. Now,
yes.
Firestorm is kind of a little cult favorite within the DCU. I can't see him going, even though... You know, you're right. You mentioned earlier Ethan Van Shriver and Gail Simone are good talent team. So hopefully they can carry this guy through, longer than 8 or 10 issues.
Yeah. Okay. And then we got, I'm going to say yes for those because I like that team.
Right.
And then we got art by Yildiray Sinar, by the way, for that Firestorm. Green Arrow, we've got JT Krull again with art by Dan Jurgens and Norm Rapmund. You know what? I don't know. I'm not a fan. I'm going to have to say no.
This is what I say. After about issue 11, merge him in with the Green Lantern.
Yeah, exactly.
They've done it before. It worked.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Go ahead.
Then we got Savage Hawkman with Tony Daniel and art by Philip Tan. I'm going to say yes, but only for about 20 issues or so, and then it's going to die off.
Yeah, Hawkman. I just can't see Hawkman. Hawkman's a great alternative character guy that crosses over into the things, but Hawkman has never been able to carry his own title.
Okay, so let's keep going here. Very quickly, we're going to do two more. We're going to do Mr. Terrific. You know what? Mr. Terrific is a great character. As part of a team. I don't know if he can carry his own title.
He won't carry his own title. So
we're
going to say no to Mr. Terrific. And the anthology DC Universe Presents.
Paul Jenkins is a great writer. Uh-huh. You know what? And Bernard Chang is a great, great artist. I'm going to say yes for this one. But we're going to have to see how well it goes.
Right. Fair enough. Okay. Let's end it there, Chris, because because we're out of time.
We're out of time, unfortunately.
Right. Chris, let's get to that last page because we really don't know how to close the show unless we read it, though, do we? Yeah.
Thank goodness we have producers that write the stuff for
us.
Eh? Okay. Well, and here's how it goes. Well, that is all the time we have for today.
Wow. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link, scroll down, and add your comments near the bottom.
And remember, no one ever talks about the guy who is second best at what he does.
Yes, and please support your local comic book shop.
Go out and have yourself a great day.